Hello, everybody. Welcome to today's show on Health Chatter. And the subject is, how do you manage your health? And we're only going to have the Health Chatter crew talk about this. It'll be an interesting discussion for sure. We've got a great crew, as always, that help us make these shows successful and interesting and get them out to you, the listening audience. Maddie Levine Wolf is helping us today with the recording, also does background research for us. Aaron Collins will be with us shortly, does background research. DeAndre Howard, Matthew Campbell is our production master who gets the shows out to you with a little music attached to it. And then, of course, there's Sheridan Nygaard, who helps us with research and also transcribing the shows on our website. My partners in crime here are Clarence Jones and also Dr. Barry Baines, who should have some interesting insights today for today's show on managing your health. So thank you to everyone. You're great, great colleagues and friends. Human Partnership is our co-host sponsor for our shows, and they're a great community health organization. Check them out at humanpartnershipalliance.org, and check us out at healthchatterpodcast.com. All our shows are available on the website. Our background research is also available. From time to time, we add research to particular shows as guests send us information. Also, if you have questions or comments, feel free to check us out there as well. So again, healthchatterpodcast.com. So today's show, like I mentioned, how do you manage your health? And I was thinking about this about 2 months ago. I said, God, you know, that would be just an interesting question, because I'm sure that we all manage our health differently to a certain extent. And I also have a feeling that it's a function of age. Also, I have a function, I believe it's a function of whether or not you have a particular medical condition that you're dealing with, either acutely or chronically. But regardless, we're in this mode of managing our health. So Barry, I'm gonna let you kind of kick it off a little bit, and just say, okay, look, what's the story here? It's like you're a doc, you've seen patients, you know, all your career, and what is it about managing our health?
Well, like I say, it is a lot to talk about, and so I'm going to ask you and Clarence to give me the high sign if I'm, you know, when you want me to
okay,
stop.
I just did. No, I mean, go ahead.
No, you know, because at once, and with, I mean, both of you have been involved in public health and community health for a long time. And, you know, from my perch, I was more in the weeds in a sense, you know, that frontline seeing patients and prevent, you know, my perspective is that prevention is always the catchword for managing your health. But it's changed in a way over time that offers both opportunities for people to manage their health better, but the flip side of that is that the information can be so over, number one, could be so overwhelming, okay, that, you know, it's one thing to go to a grocery store and have to pick, you know, one of three different salsas, okay, for your chips.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's another thing when you go in and there's like 100 jars. You know,
right.
how do you, you know, it's like it's overload and you get paralyzed at making decisions. But when we were kicking this around to talk a little bit about managing your health, the thing that came to mind is, you know, stuff that comes in the area mostly of what's called primary prevention. And I think actually we should probably nail down some definitions, just so that our listening audience has a sense that when we talk about prevention, prevention, prevention,
Right.
there's primary prevention, secondary prevention, and tertiary prevention. And I'm going to kind of give a brief definition for this, and please jump in if I stumble on one of these. But primary prevention is where you actually are able to prevent an illness or disease from ever happening. And so, one example that's an easy one, or used to be easy, but has now socially and politically has become a hot potato. You get a vaccine for polio and you never get polio. You get a vaccine for measles, you never get measles. Okay, that's
Yeah, and there's
primary.
another aspect to primary prevention too. I mean, like wearing your seatbelt.
Y yes, right.
Okay, so I mean, it's not always medically or health perspective
Right, it's
altogether,
also
but
behavior, right, it's behavior.
behavioral,
Yeah,
right?
exactly. That's a big part of it. And I'm going to delve into that because that's the one that's I don't know, I guess appeals to me the most because it has the most le the biggest impact if you could prevent something from happening. Before it even gets there. And then secondary prevention really focuses on an early diagnosis and
Correct.
interventions of an illness. So the example I'll give is that if somebody through regular checkups, let's say it determines that they have adult onset diabetes, okay, then you can really intervene early to do both lifestyle changes and medications to help control it so that the disease really doesn't continue to get worse and worse, where then you move into all the problems that you get from diseases over the long term. And the tertiary prevention is where you're really trying to limit disability and death.
Right.
I
And
mean,
that's,
it's
the secondary, I remember in the public health field, we defined that as diagnosis and treatment that included screening.
right.
And then tertiary prevention includes the aspects of rehabilitation. And what's interesting about the levels of prevention is they're kind of circular. It's like, okay, let's just say for argument's sake, you've had a heart attack, okay, and you've lived through it, and then you do everything, medication-wise, rehab-wise. Why? To prevent another heart attack, okay? So it's very circular. So the rehab and the medication becomes almost like a primary prevention for the possibility of another episode. So it's circular in that sense.
And so what I'd like to do is if I can is to get up on the soapbox for just a few minutes and and talk about in the primary prevention area. And that's the other thing is that things that you could do to prevent disease from ever happening also follow through with if you have an early diagnosis of the disease, these things can help to slow progression, etc. And even in the later stages, these are sort of like the fundamental building blocks, and it's like the scaffolding of how to manage your health. And this is not even getting into medicines, pharmacology, which plays a big part as well, not so much in primary prevention, but in secondary and tertiary prevention. But I just, put together my small list that's, let's see, I think it's, yeah, I wanted to say it was like the dirty half dozen here, but it looks like I only have put down five things. I could probably come up with six. Harry can help me. But some of these things are so basic, and I would like to decomplicate it. Because as an example, well, let me give you the list. Exercising, okay. Attention to nutrition or eating well. Getting enough sleep. And then having social relationships, this idea of being with other people. And then another one, which is supposed to be worse than smoking, is if you sit too much during the day, just not sitting, or, you know, or getting up every hour. And so the way I want to make this less complicated is that when people hear exercise covers such a broad swath of what you can do. And very often just taking a walk for 10 minutes has an impact. Mm-hmm. And you do that three times a day, you do that every day. It's amazing the managing your health benefits that it has, not only physically, but also mentally. And then if you know, the nice thing about the Twin Cities, it was cities that were designed to have green space, like within six blocks of just about every, you know, house or where you live, and taking a walk and walking like in a park or green space also is very good for your mental health as well. So, you know, it doesn't have to be, pumping iron, you know, five times a week and running a marathon every other day. I mean, you can get involved in more activities, but there are a lot of different activities, and it's the biggest thing is finding something that you like. And correct. Just do it a bit. Just find something that you like. Not if you're, you know, your best friend, likes to be on Stairmaster for 3 hours a day, but that might not be your thing. That wouldn't be my thing, you know.
You know, so as we talk about exercise, here's one question that I, or a comment that I have about it. Mm. I wonder whether people in general, the reason that they might be more negative on exercise is that they don't see the immediacy of it. Okay. Mm-hmm. If I go for a walk, you know, it's like you just said, if you go for a walk for 10 minutes, it has an impact. Oh, mm-hmm. really? What's mm-hmm. that impact? Tell me what that impact. Should I feel that immediately? Or do I have to wait, you know, 6 months before maybe I realize that these little 10 minute walks are doing something for me?
Well, I guess, faith and trust.
Faith and trust. Okay.
Is important because part of doing those, 10 minute walks three times a day, the benefit is what you don't get. Do you know what I mean?
Correct.
And so it's, again, it's,
yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
It's that, right. The benefit. Yeah,
you're avoiding.
Like, how do you talk about, yeah, this is great. And as a benefit of this, I don't get something which I never see, you don't see it. So you do have to, have some faith and trust that doing these things is helpful to the cardiovascular system. It's good for your mental health. People feel good, you know, after doing exercise. And so that's, you know, it's like the idea of forming habits for healthy living. That's how you manage your health overall. And so the exercise one is fairly easy. And you don't, like I say, all you need is comfortable shoes. And those are important, to have comfortable shoes, and you go and just walking. Walking is actually one of the best exercises that you can do. And if you don't have a mobility problem, you know, with walking, that's a great one to do. And it's within many people's grasps as well. Eating well. And by eating well, it's just if you think they, you know, the papers have been plastered with this idea that people, children, 60% of their calories are from ultra processed foods. And adults, it's like 50%. And those have effects that they haven't even unpacked how unhealthy that is and the impact on diseases going forward. I'm sure that diabetes, obesity, you know, are going to be leading the pack. But we talk about eating well. It's eating fruits, vegetables, and whole grains. That's it. Now, that being said, you know, because we've had shows on Health Chatter that talk about many neighborhoods are food deserts. And the I
correct.
We've delved into that. And the idea, if you can get fresh fruits and vegetables and eat whole grains, but do it every day, not just, once in a while. That has shown to have a really big impact. And again, it's healthy eating habits. But that's a little bit harder, especially because people are sensitive to food prices, right? And sometimes it's easier to spend a couple of bucks and get 1,000 calories, by eating something that satisfies your hunger, but nutritionally might not, be overly healthy. But again, just think fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and just have that in your diet. Try and have that with every meal somewhere. I mean,
All
I've
right,
never
so
been.
that's number two, right?
That's number two.
Okay, number three.
Number three, which again, so much research is coming out about the importance of sleep in so many different areas. One of them that's the mo that I've read about is that lack of sleep is a significant contributor to developing Alzheimer's dementia as you get older, and so that's one there. A lot of the There's a lot of social things with sleep that, well, I'm I only need 5 hours of sleep, or I only need 4 hours of sleep. And that's just not true. And the mind, our brain needs sleep to process information. And that's actually where some of the cognition problems and dementia can potentially come in, because actually the brain works while you sleep. And oftentimes people are much more better problem solvers when they get enough sleep. So what is enough sleep? Typically, it should be 7 to 9 hours. Okay. Now that, 7 hours should be the absolute minimum. I know that's what I shoot for. I used to think, oh, I only need, 5.5 or 6 hours of sleep. But then when you don't get enough sleep, you're just not as sharp, and you lose your concentration, ability to focus.
And it's not as healthy.
And it's not as healthy. And they're finding more and more issues with people who don't sleep, with I think with cardiac things as well, cardiac illnesses that people develop, blood pressure things, there's all kind of things there. So that's
So that's number three.
that's number three. And then number four is this idea of having a social community, having interactions, relationships with people. I think we talked about one time on the blue zones, with looking at the five different communities. Dan Kuettner, is that the
Correct.
author? Looked at five communities around the world where, like, the number of people who live, talk about longevity, right? The number of centenarians, people who live over 100. They also, on the nutrition side, add nuts, like, the importance of, like cashews and Brazil nuts and nuts and seeds are really important. But this idea of having social relationships and social connections, and again, we've had shows, podcasts talking about the effect of isolation on mental health, right? And
Yeah, we could even
depression.
talk about that as it
Yeah.
related to COVID,
Yes,
when
right.
people became more isolated. And I
Yeah.
think the jury is still out on, the effects of that.
Yeah. And so the social piece is very important, and it also supports other things. Well, what do I mean by that? I have a group of people that we started off running. Now we walk most of the time. Okay. But if I was going to have to get up and go by myself,
Hard.
that's tough. That was tough, okay? But when
But
I
you have a
know there's
dog.
one, two, or three, or four of my friends standing outside my door waiting for me, okay? That's, again, it's that social piece that encourages activity. And so, those are two things
It's social, not guilt.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. Yeah, we should do a show on
All
guilt.
right, number
But
five.
anyway, no, but
Number five.
yeah. And then the last one is this whole, idea that so many of our jobs are sedentary, and we sit too much. I mean, now for me, fortunately, I have one of these watches that if I don't stand in an hour, it dings and says, hey, it's time for you to
stand up
and walk around for a minute. And literally, that's something that, you know, if you can't have, like, do your work standing up, okay, then, and you're sitting down most of the time, every hour you should just get up and walk around for a minute, because they're finding that not only is sedentary and sitting too much really bad for you, but it's in a number of different ways. And certainly, you know, sitting, you know, arthritis in your neck and shoulders because you're, you know, sitting and hunched up,
right.
And things like that. And so even, you know, while you're doing that, to do some, you know, kind of, you know, yoga stretches or whatever you want to call it, just to limber up. But getting up every hour that you're awake during the day, you don't have to do this at night. Okay. But during the day, every hour, you should just get up and walk around for a minute, because they're finding that the sedentary lifestyle and sitting for too much is, like I say, worse than, you're the equivalent of like smoking a pack of cigarettes every day.
Yeah.
In the long
term. So, you know, what's interesting about all of this is you're telling us what we should be doing. Okay. The question is, how is it that you do manage your health? So do you exercise? Do you eat properly? Do you have social contacts, et cetera? So, all right. So hold on.
Yeah.
So Aaron, are you there? Aaron.
I'm here.
All right. So you're an important voice in this discussion on how is it that you manage your health. And I'm going to start it out with you, Aaron, this way. You know, you've made it known on our shows that, and thank you for that, that you're diabetic. And the question I have for you is, how was it that you managed your health before you were diagnosed versus how is it that you manage your health now that you have diabetes?
I think my answer is really simple. Before getting diagnosed with type 1, I was a healthy person who didn't really have to think twice or spend too much time thinking about health, or at least like I didn't think about it maybe as much as somebody in medicine would say I should. I mean, I was healthy. I didn't need to go to the doctor more than once a year. I worked out, I ate well. Like, it wasn't, going to the doctor just to check in wasn't really something that was on my mind because I was living an overall healthy lifestyle. And then after getting diagnosed, I'm going to see the doctor on a quarterly basis. I see different specialists, and then I see my primary care twice a year just to make sure that my primary care and my endocrinologist are on the same page. And I definitely feel like after getting diagnosed, I'm much more proactive and like a preventative mindset, because I don't want to end up back in the hospital. So if there's a theme amongst any of it, is that just keeping it on the forefront, making sure you're staying up to date with preventative visits, is just a good mindset to have.
So, all right, Clarence.
I'm really
your
glad.
Turn.
Yeah, I'm glad that Aaron went first, because hey, it was interesting. I was thinking about this topic when we were talking about it. I thought, like, okay, managing my health usually was not on my mind. I used to watch older people who would sit around and they'd talk about their health and all those kinds of things. And I'd laugh like, oh man, you know, don't you have something better to do? And so managing your health was never really, as I was younger, was never really an issue. And I appreciate you, Aaron, saying that. It's when you're younger, you don't really think about it. But as you start getting older, you start recognizing that there are different things that are going on. So for me, what I recognized was that there were certain issues that occurred at certain ages for me as a male. And so, you know, I had to, and as a Black male, you know, there were certain things that came up that I had to be aware of. Now, how I managed that was whether or not I was going to really be willing to take action. For example, prostate cancer exams. At a certain time, they say take prostate cancer exam. Well, I had to figure out whether or not I was willing to let the digital exam be a part of that process. I mean, how do I manage that? I had to figure that out. Pre-diabetic, I had to figure out how do I, or if I'm willing to give up the sodas and the potato chips and all those kind of things, how do you manage that? I think that part of, how do you manage that really is being aware of the fact that there are certain things that you need to be conscious of. But then the other part, though, is the emotional and mental requirements to be able to do those things. Because
Yeah.
if you're young and you can move around, they say, well, that doesn't apply to me. That's some other folk. So I think how do you manage your health for me really is to be aware of it, what the data shows, what the best evidence shows, and then to be willing to see whether or not you are experiencing those things. For example, for me, as a male, I just had a prostate cancer operation. Okay, well, managing my health meant that 8, 10 years ago, I found out that I had a higher PSA, right? So my thing was that I don't know if I want to be bothered with this, but what I did was I did that. What's that? Watchful waiting. A watchful waiting. I managed my health was I didn't want to get an operation, but the only way that I was going to escape that was that my numbers didn't get so high that I couldn't I had to make a decision. And so what happens for me in managing my health was when I go to the doctor, I say, okay, give me the PSA thing, because I know that it's a possibility that I had to take some kind of action. So managing my health was I became aware that as a male, I do have the possibility of prostate cancer. I had to watch for that, and then I had to make a decision. How do you manage it? I had to make a decision that I was going to do it. The same thing with being pre-diabetic. I knew that I had it. I had to figure out whether or not I was going to listen to anybody, And then, whenever I went to the doctor, I said, okay, well, check that diabetes thing. So if it's not too bad, then I can eat more sugar. You know what I mean? Just crazy stuff. I mean, we do stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like, we manage stuff based on, how emotional we feel until it gets to the point where we can't ignore it. And I think that was how I came across this. I mean, this topic, like, yeah, but we need to be aware.
What I've come to realize after, reflecting on this is like certain things happen to you and then you have to adjust. Okay, so let me give you a perfect illustration. I'll give you two illustrations. First one is I've had both of my knees replaced. Before that, I used to teach and play tennis like you wouldn't believe. Okay? And I had to adjust that. Okay, after those surgeries. All right. I've had detached retinas in both eyes, which, believe me, is not a fun thing to have. It's not painful, but it mentally can really get to you. So the other day, just to give you an idea, and this will kind of segue into the next subject for this show. The other day, I went and had my eyes examined by my ophthalmologist. And she knows that that is heavy on my mind when I come and visit her. Are these damned retinas okay? So she walks in and she hardly says hello to me. And she says, "Let's check." That's what she said just the other day. "Let's check." And sure enough, she goes, checks the retinas. Yes, they were in great shape. But she said, "They look super. Now, how are you?" Okay, then she got into the discussion. So she knew that, that was, on my mind. All right. Which gets to this subject. And Aaron, you kind of touched on this a little bit. It's like, how is it that your providers of care help you to manage your health, your providers of care? How is it that technology is helping you to manage your care? So, Aaron, in the background research, you put in an interesting question I hadn't even thought of. It's like we have available to us as patients MyChart, for instance, where you can go in and see all the test results and all the things and your medications and when you're due for an exam here, exam there, and it's available to you online. Also, Barry, you mentioned that we have other devices, like watches now that, can take your pulse, can take your ECG, your whatever. Okay. It can tell you to stand up, it can tell you to walk more, it can tell you your dog is barking at you that, he or she wants to go for a walk. It can do just about everything. Then we have these monitors, where, these apps that say, okay, mark down what you ate today, mark down, that you did your yoga class today. So to a certain extent, technology has taken over here a little bit in help in trying at least to help us manage our health. So I want us to comment on that. Okay. So Clarence, what do you think about all that? And then we'll circle back to Barry here. What do you think about, all these helpful, and I'm putting the word helpful in quotes here, aspects that help us to theoretically manage our health.
Well, it's interesting. I just in the last 2 weeks, I got me one of those watches. You know,
Yeah, there you go.
it was on sale. Okay, so
Yeah.
because
There
those
you
things
go.
cost, they can cost a lot of money, right?
Yeah,
Okay,
it's
but
always
anyway,
bid
so
for
yeah,
sale, but not on sale.
this was an Amazon special. Okay, but
Yeah.
anyway, what I think was that it's been interesting. It's been interesting looking at it and understanding what does it really indicate. For example, I looked at my sleep and it said I only got 4 hours and 15 minutes last night. Barry was just talking about, 7 hours. And I'm saying, like, well, wait a minute, is what I'm measuring, is it really what I'm thinking? You know what I mean? So I think it gives us an opportunity to really enter into the question at a more informed basis. I mean, the fact is, yeah, so my heartbeat, I looked at my blood oxygen, I'm 99 to 96, all those kinds of things. And then I'm able to make some decisions about how I do what I do. So for me, the technology is important if you really understand how to utilize it, and if you're willing to again check that, check what your technology is saying up against what your physician is saying. You gotta have a check and balance.
Balance it.
You gotta balance it. Yeah, I mean, because
Yeah.
your technology can get wacky too. So I think it's important to look at both of them in order to make an informed decision.
So for our listening audience, I asked this gang who's on this show, do any this is before I had one of these, these Apple watches, which I have too. And I asked, who's got one? And it's like, and how do you use it? And it was really interesting when I got some insight from all of you. Oh, I use it to do this. Oh, it's good for this. Oh, it's, et cetera. And okay, fine. Barry, all right. So I know you have one. Yeah, go
Yeah.
ahead.
Yeah. No, I just want to in some ways take kind of sort of toss off my medical hat because I'm a person also.
Yeah, imagine that. Yeah, right.
I like the Apple Watch because I have atrial fibrillation and at times and it's nice to know what's going on. But I think that where these apps, I think overall that they're good to
Okay.
have. Okay, but it's just the tool. And It could be helpful in terms of motivation. And you know, within public health, there's this whole concept of readiness for change, you know, for any, just about any behavior that, you know, you don't even want to think, you know, this made its grand entrance actually in psychiatry, but with quitting smoking, for example. That if someone is not interested in quitting smoking, there's no point in having a conversation about it. But people over time, they say, well, maybe I'd like to hear about it. And then they, you know, get to a point that the motivation, they'd like to maybe learn more about what they could do to change and then actually, you know, take action. So for me, what I found, again, as a normal person, not as a physician, is that it's a tool to check in and motivate me. So that when my watch, when it's 10 o'clock at night, and it's you know, and I get the message, you know, hey, you just need to like walk for 5 minutes more, and you'll close your exercise ring, you know. So then, okay, well, I take my dog out at 10, but usually I just have to go in front of the house, and he does his business, and we come back in, and I go, Bluey, we're gonna go around the block now tonight. Okay. Do you know what I mean? So it's sort of you know, helps me keep tabs on those things. And the information is valuable, and certainly from now putting my medical hat back on, that information, people, you know, slash patient, but people are able to collect more data that can be helpful to physicians to get a bigger picture of what's going on in a person's health. And that's I think very, you know, very helpful. Like when I went to see my cardiologist a few months ago, I said, hey, do you want to see my AFib history over the last 6 months? You know, he
Yeah.
said, well, yeah, why don't you, you know, yeah, you could, you know, show that to me. But I said, but it's good, you know, it just kind of, you know, helps me to keep track of where I'm at. And those kind of things, just like the monitoring with diabetes and blood sugars. You know,
Yeah,
those kind of
yeah.
things are more, you know, some of them more continuous, and some are things that you could you know, check in with. So I
So,
don't know if I,
Aaron. You
yeah.
know, you've, I know, Aaron, you use, I think you use a monitor to help manage your health a little bit. What's your feeling on all of this?
I really like it. I mean, I use mine more for fitness tracking than anything else to like record a workout, or I do a lot of heart rate zone training. So like on Wednesdays I'm going for zone 4, and then on Thursdays I'm going for zone 2, and wearing the watch with a heart rate is really great for me to be able to stay in those zones and train them very like target training. But I also wear them for sleep. I am religious about sleep. I usually get between 8 and 9 hours. And on nights that I don't get a good night's sleep, I almost kind of use it as a, okay, I'm going to give myself a little bit of a grace today. No need to go crazy at the gym. No need to stay up super late. I should get to bed at a decent time tonight. But I also am able to view my blood sugar from my continuous glucose monitor on my watch face too. So instead of having to like pull
Cool.
out my phone or my insulin pump, it's very readily accessible. And I really liked the one of the questions you asked, Dan, if it's okay for me to leave you with something before I hop off. You asked a question about how your primary care like keeps you accountable for your health or something. I remember you were asking what sort of things you use for that. And I feel like I have a very strong opinion on this, that it's not really your doctor's job to keep you accountable, right? Their doctor's job is to give you advice to keep you healthy. But like Barry said, at the end of the day, if there's no mindset on your part of wanting to change and wanting to be engaged in that aspect of your life and keeping yourself healthy, then it's just not going to work that way. Like, we need to find a way to engage people in their health and stay interested in their health first. I don't think people are going to take anything their doctor has to say to heart if they're not in the mindset of wanting to be healthy.
You know, as it relates to that a little bit, certain people are scared into doing certain things for their health as well. Okay. Like, for instance, you might get into a car accident and you haven't been wearing your seatbelt, and now you do. Okay. It's after the fact. Or you've experienced a heart attack, or you've had a stroke. Oh, geez, I have to adjust my lifestyle now. And it also doesn't always depend upon you doing it. It also, if you have a significant other, they're involved in it as well. Maddie, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
What do you think?
I manage my health mostly by just trying to eat quote unquote healthy, whatever that means, because I feel like there are different definitions, and making sure that I'm moving my body to some extent throughout the day. And then also keeping up with my like annual physical appointments, whether that's like my annual physical with my primary physician, my annual body scan with my dermatologist, and things like that, because I think, there are different parts of your health that you have to keep up with in order to have like a holistic approach. Seeing the dentist every 6 months, like that's part of your overall health. So, I think it's a combination of doing things on my own, like Aaron said, it's my responsibility to manage my own health, and then making sure I'm keeping up with my appointments and everything too, to make sure that I'm getting like the, professional opinions as to how my health is looking.
So, do you find as health professionals, I mean, we're all health professionals, do you find that you give advice to others? Whether it's your friends, whether it's significant others, family, whatever, do you get into that mode, or do we try to stay away from it? What do you think, Barry?
Well, I'm asked for advice a fair amount, and that's okay. I usually again couch it in a term that it puts it back. I think, as Aaron and Maddie said, it's not my decision. It's your decision. Here's information, and hopefully you will choose the healthy track. Or if not now, maybe at some point in the future. I mean, I get we talk about health things a lot, but oftentimes the other issue, of course, is not only what you talk about, but when you're with your friends, there's also a thing like
Right.
leading by example. Like, yeah, you got to eat healthy. Please pass me the cheese Danish. So,
And
I mean,
typically the answer to that's good for your mental health, right?
right, yeah, so it's a mix of things, but I think that idea is, again, is trying to, to live healthily. And part of it is, at least, whether we do these things or not, the first step is to know what are the kind of things that you could do. Because the reality is, you can't do everything all at once. I mean, there's only 24 hours in the day, and if you have to sleep for 7 to 9 of them, okay.
Right.
It's one thing is, the person who exercised, 12 hours a day, so that he could live 5 years longer, but those 5 years were spent, were actually just spent exercising.
So, all right, we're gonna wrap it up here. So I've got I'm just going to throw this out, and I'll let everybody in the audience think about that. There are other things as well that affect our health, like, for instance, climate. Okay, that individually you might not think that you have as much of a choice on how to affect it, but if we all somehow or other were more cognizant of things that in the climate, maybe that would have an adjustment to our health. So here are a couple of words that I think kind of nail it, at least for me. One, listen to your body. and adjust accordingly. If something hurts after you've done a bunch of exercise, okay, listen to your body. Your body's telling you, and you might slow it down a little bit the next day. Adjust. I think we get into the mode of adjusting, especially after we've had an event. Continue to do it. Even if you have your ups and downs, as long as you continue, I think that really helps to manage. And then finally, although this isn't one word, but there's no need to be perfect. You really just like, Barry, you were saying 10 minutes. Your body will love you for it. Okay, Clarence, last thoughts.
You know, this has really been an interesting conversation. I do believe that it's important to talk about it. I
Yeah.
think it's important to enter into the conversation because I think, as we said a little bit earlier, when you're younger, you don't think about it. But I think our health is important, and to be able to do that in a way in which you feel like you can actually do something and make some positive changes, it's great. So this conversation is good to have.
Yeah, and it's good to share it with other people. Barry.
Three quick points. One builds on yours, Stan, and that is the saying, perfect is the enemy of good enough. Okay, so if it's good enough, it's okay.
Yeah.
The other thing I want to strongly advocate for is to be kind to yourself. Be
That's a
forgiving
great one.
of yourself. And then the last one is that the idea of managing health. What's the goal? And the goal usually is that so you can live a life where you get to do the things that you want to do and
And
that
you
you
feel
enjoy.
better.
And that you enjoy. So
Yeah.
that's all I have to say.
And I hope that, for our listening audience, you take some of these ideas and quote, run with them, unquote.
Or walk with
So
them.
great show, everybody. Our next show that we're going to be doing is on meditation and health, which is actually kind of a nice linkage to this show. Okay, it's like, what do you do to kind of slow it down and relax and breathe? And we're going to be talking that with Dr. David Alter on our next show. So thanks to all of you, great insights, and thanks to you, the listening audience, and remember to keep health chatting away.